Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Dr. Andrew von Eschenbach, director of the National Cancer Institute. And joining us on our conversation is Tom Berlin. Well, Dr. von Eschenbach, in the last segment, you were going through your personal experiences, and one thing I wanted to just pick up on was I think it's important to mention that you're a cancer survivor. How does that personal experience affect what you do?
Well, Paul, one of the things it's done is to give me a real sense of urgency and understand and appreciate the terrible impact that cancer has not only on us individually but on our families and everyone around us. And to recognize that we now have it within our grasp because of the tremendous progress that's been made in cancer research and in biomedical research, because of the tremendous blessings that we have as a nation, and that over the past three decades we've used those blessings to really now begin to create an opportunity where people do not need to suffer and die from cancer. I see it now from both perspectives, both the reality of what cancer means when you're affected by it and the opportunities that are existing in which we can really change that reality.
You spoke about the effect of cancer on the family. Could you give us a sense of the magnitude of how it affects the American family?
Well, we know, just in terms of the raw statistics, one out of every two men, one out of every three women in their lifetime will hear the words, "You have cancer." More than 75% of all families in the United States today have someone who's affected by cancer. As we sit here this morning, one American every minute is dying of this disease, and there are millions of people around the world dying from cancer. Essentially, almost no one is not affected by cancer. And since it is associated with aging, as we are an aging population in this nation, and as more baby boomers are getting older, the burden of cancer is actually going to increase in terms of the number of people affected. So those are the raw statistics in terms of the magnitude of the problem. But they don't really tell the story in terms of what cancer means to people. It's the disease that Americans fear the most. It's the disease that carries with it, for both the person affected as well as those who love and care for them, an enormous burden of suffering, both physically and emotionally. So as a healthcare problem, it's one of the most significant challenges that we must address and face and eliminate.
Doctor, with those ominous statistics and the effect that has on people's lives, it's just even more amazing to me the ambitious goal that has been set by you to eliminate cancer from our lives by the year 2015. Not just for the National Cancer Institute, but really for the whole cancer care community. Can you tell us a little bit about what led you to set that ambitious goal?
Yeah, I think it's very important, Tom, that I set that goal very clearly. First of all, the goal is to eliminate the suffering and death that results from cancer. Essentially, it's a goal to eliminate the outcome of cancer. And we now know that cancer is a disease process. It's a process that has a beginning in which, even perhaps from the moment we're born by virtue of our genes, etc., that process begins with our being susceptible to cancer. Our environment then interacts and impacts upon us, and at some point in time, that interaction of the environment and our genes results in us developing a cancer. The cancer then, that process continues to the point where that cancer cell has to grow into a tumor. The process continues to the point where it spreads and invades and then disseminates or metastasizes to other parts of the body. And then only then, usually, does it result in death. So the outcome of cancer is an outcome of a process. And over the past three decades, with our commitment to cancer research, because of the tremendous effort of so many thousands of investigators, not only in this country, but even around the world, we've begun to understand that process. We're understanding all of the steps that are associated with why we're susceptible, how a cancer develops, how it grows, what results in it being able to spread and metastasize. And as we understand those steps at a very fundamental genetic, molecular, and cellular level, and as we understand it not only in the tumor, but in the interaction of that tumor and the person with that tumor, we're beginning to now define and develop interventions. interventions that can preempt that process, interventions that will enable us to prevent that process from ever occurring in the first place, interventions that will detect that process very early in its development when we can more effectively and more safely intervene, and interventions that are enabling us to eliminate the process or control it in a way such that people will live with and not die from a result of the cancer. So what I've described to you is the fact that we're now thinking about cancer in a completely different way. Cancer is actually quite vulnerable to these new opportunities because there are so many steps along the way where we can begin to think about preempting the process. There will not be a single magic bullet that will take care of the entire process. But there can be magic strategies, ways in which we will combine interventions that will preempt that process. And those interventions will be tailored and individualized because what might be an appropriate intervention for you may require something somewhat different from me. The tools we now are developing because of emerging technologies are now making it possible for us to get the right treatment for the right patient at the right time for the right reasons. And that will transform our ability to manage cancer in a way that no one will suffer and die.
Doctor, can you tell us a little bit about what kinds of cancer treatments might be in the pipeline that people would be interested in hearing about?
Well, let's take that idea of preemption of the process, and I mentioned we'll prevent more, we'll detect and eliminate more, and we'll be able to modulate or control more. Across that entire spectrum, there is already proof in principle for many of these targeted mechanistic-based interventions. For example, our ability to detect cancer very early. People generally die from cancer because, unfortunately, by the time we know it's there, it's usually too far advanced. A woman with ovarian cancer today, more often than not, by the time we're able to detect the ovarian cancer, it has become more extensive and spread. We're working on technologies that with a single drop of blood, using a laser, a mass spectrometer, and sophisticated high-end computing, we'll be able to look at protein signatures in the blood that will enable us to detect ovarian cancer much, much earlier than we can see it with an X-ray or even detect it with currently available blood tests like CA125. We're looking at opportunities for being able to take genomics and create arrays in which we can begin to not just define cancer by its anatomic site or what it looks like under a microscope, but define the cancer by virtue of its genetic makeup. And that's giving us an opportunity to more appropriately select an effective intervention. We're being able to envision being able to look at patients from that same perspective and help them understand their individual risk for cancer so that we can tailor or modulate selective interventions that might be appropriate for them to prevent them from ever getting cancer in the first place.
Dr. von Eschenbach, you rightly directed us to appreciate that it's eliminating suffering and death from cancer by 2015. Why 2015?
We're sitting at a moment in time, Paul, where we're not starting at ground zero. We've made a lot of progress. And we're at a point now where approximately 2 out of 3 patients who are told that they can have cancer can look forward to being alive 5 years later. And we'd like to make that 3 out of 3. If we look at what it will take to close that gap, to make that kind of progress, and we look at the technologies that are emerging and that are available, the toolkit with which we can begin to capitalize on what we've learned about cancer, I believe that the pace of progress will not be linear, but will actually be exponential. If you just think for a moment about information technologies, what computers have now made it possible for us to do just in our day in and day out life. And you begin to think about applying those kinds of technologies to the biomedical research enterprise and the cancer research enterprise. I believe we have it within our grasp to continuously and rapidly accelerate the pace of progress such that a timeline of 10 years to 2015, although it may seem overly ambitious and aggressive, I think is really quite doable. I remember when President Kennedy said in 1961 that we should commit to putting a man on the moon and bringing him back safely. We had not yet even put a man up in orbit yet. It had only been 3 years since we had put up our first satellite. So he defined a timeline that at that point was unbelievably ambitious, and yet we accomplished that goal in 1969. I believe that we need to commit to a goal that's ambitious, to mobilize and utilize the resources that are available, and more importantly, for the NCI to fulfill its responsibility to provide the leadership, to bring together the community, bring it together across its entire spectrum in terms of the academic community, the private sector, the biotechnology, pharmaceutical industry, the technology industries, the device makers. All of the parts and pieces come together in a focused, cohesive, coherent way with the idea that our mission is to keep people from suffering and dying from this disease.
It's perspective setting to think about 10 years as a short time. The National Cancer Institute recently launched the Cancer Biomedical Informatics Grid. What is this grid? We'll ask Dr. Andrew von Eschenbach, director of the National Cancer Institute, to explain this to us when the Business of Government Hour returns.